guys. Welcome.
Hi, Hemel.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Welcome to everybody at home listening to the show. Today is an all-women episode of Culture Time. Mm-hmm. I'm Hemel. With me is Sari Wiener.
Hello.
And big surprise, Payal Jhaveri.
Hello.
My sister. Do you think, to kick things off, it is sexist for me to have women on the show only to talk about romantic comedies?
I think it would be hard to find a man to come on to talk about romantic comedies.
I agree 100%.
You don't think that's sexist, though?
No, our culture has not evolved to the point where we are focusing romantic comedies on towards the male audience.
You had a woman on to talk about a superhero movie.
Yeah, I had a woman on to talk about Wonder Woman, which is great. So maybe there'll be a lot of giggles on this show, which will be fun and lighthearted. But the reason for the episode is that we have had Brian on quite a bit, and it's very hard to have some conversations that sometimes are just better with a bunch of women in a room. And I think that this romantic comedy conversation is one of them. We initially wanted to talk about underrated romantic comedies, like our love for some of them. I did a little bit of reading before this show because my feelings on romantic comedies are a little complicated. I'm not a big rom-com person. It's never really been a genre that I've enjoyed. So in the reading that I read, was one of the tropes for romantic comedies is the grand romantic gesture that, you know, it's like the say anything boombox moment.
Richard Gere in the limo.
You know, Love Actually guy showing up at her house, like the cards. The grand romantic gesture now is like hugely problematic because people are like, oh, this guy's a crazy stalker. He showed up at your house.
Well, I don't know if it's problematic in the movies, but what really bugs me is when people try to pull it off in real life because they think that's what women want.
Yes,
and it's so awkward. Mm-hmm. And I hear stories, never happened to me in my life, but I hear stories about plans people have and things they're doing. And I was like, that is just a bad idea.
Yeah. It's like every public proposal at a baseball game on the Jumbotron that you are just cringing because you know she doesn't want to say yes.
Right. And this is the problem, though, is that it's set up generations of people to think that that is romance when that's not actually the case. It's a Hollywood trope that people kind of ran with, that the idea sounds good theoretically, but in practice is just terrible, right?
Yeah. So that's nice when it's accompanied by the music and like the close-ups but it doesn't work in real life.
The Hollywood actors, you know, who are incredibly attractive, et cetera, et cetera. It's a whole different escapism thing.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, real life people, regular people like us.
Go ahead.
I was going to say it's funny because when we go and we talk about the movies that we picked, a lot of the reasons why I like the movies that I picked are for the opposite reason of this.
Some of your movies I have not seen, and Pyle's movies I'm kind of familiar with. But what I found in kind of the reading that I was doing in prep for this podcast is that a lot of the reasons we like these movies is because they eschew a lot of the traditional romantic comedy tropes.
Absolutely. But
Sari, you want to get started? Do you have a pick?
All right. Well, my first pick that I think is an underrated romantic comedy, and the only reason I think it's underrated is because anytime I talk to anybody about this movie, they've never heard of it. Mm-hmm. And even I just recently started to remember the name of it.
Oh.
I always had to look up the name because I remembered the movie very well, but I could not remember the name. It's called A Lot Like Love.
Oh.
Starring Ashton Kutcher and Amanda Peet.
Mm-hmm.
And Amanda Peet's adorable.
Mm-hmm.
It came out in 2005. It has a great soundtrack, which is always important to me. I think Amanda Peet is adorable. I think I mentioned that already. I don't really care very much about Ashton Kutcher, but he works in this movie. They have good chemistry, but I like the movie because they meet each other. It's like spans over several years, like a decade. And they meet each other and they immediately like each other.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no mystery about that. They're not like figuring out if they like each other. They just like are super into each other, but like the timing doesn't work and they like can't be together. And then they keep meeting up over the course of the year. So like there's never a question about whether or not they are interested in each other, and they're not like bickering or having like, I mean, they bicker a little bit, but it's good natured.
Mm-hmm.
No one's like pretending not to like, but
right.
What you get to see is them develop a really intense friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think is interesting about the movie.
So this, so the article that I'm talking about, that I was talking about earlier, is this Jen Chaney article in Vulture, and she does a really good job of kind of laying out all the tropes that we are used to seeing in romantic comedies, and then how lately the romantic comedies that we're used to have all been, those, the genre conventions have all been subverted. And one of the big ones is that they end up being friends. So in the end of your movie, is there a happy ending?
Yes. Sort, yeah, they basically, like, by the end of the movie, which is, like, after they've both been engaged to other people and blah, 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 and they live in different cities, there is the grand gesture where she thinks he is getting married. Should I, is this, like, are we worried about spoilers?
No, we're not worried about spoilers from 12 years ago. So if you have not seen this movie, I can't help you.
There's a grand gesture where she thinks he's getting married, and she shows up to his house to stop the wedding or to tell him that he loves her, and then, or she loves him, and she shows up, and then she chickens out, but he's not really getting married. It's his sister's wedding.
Oh.
So they do end up together, supposedly. You know, they don't show you that part, but...
Yeah, but it establishes more her friendship and their friendship versus the trope of, here's a woman who's looking to complete her life, and to complete her life, she needs to find a man.
No, it's just like, these two, they meet up for, like, randomly, because the timing works out for, like, a night every few years. But they've just, like, keep this connection because they get along so well, and they just, like, are really good friends and are very attracted to each other.
Are there any other tropes or conventions that it follows that,
well,
you can think of?
Yeah, the grand gesture at the end with the swelling music and the tears and the misunderstanding.
What about the Bechdel test?
Does not pass. I had to rewatch all three of my movies actually see if it if they even came close. I skimmed them. I didn't like watch all of them, but I skimmed it. This movie has there's a friend and they talk a lot, and she has a name, but they only ever talk about the boys.
Okay.
They do not, unless there's like one really short scene where she pulls a cigarette, yanks a cigarette out of her mouth and tells her not to smoke. And that is literally the only thing they talk about that isn't about boys.
Ugh, brutal.
But honestly, it's a romantic comedy. Like, it's about the relationship with the men. I don't necessarily fault that, because like, it would be nice if there was other things, but it's. You know, when you're telling a story, you don't really want to get too far away
from
what
that
story. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Pia, you're next.
So piggybacking off of two of the things that in this movie, women's libido and the couple being friends before they're together. My movie, under number one underrated romantic comedy, is What's Your Number, starring Chris Evans and Anna Faris.
A movie that I never saw, that Pyle keeps getting me, like, trying to get me to watch.
It's the best one.
See?
I would have been on my list, but I didn't think it was underrated enough because I know so many people who love it. No offense, Pyle.
No, I agree. I just think it's one of those where, for me, my definition of underrated is a little bit broader than yours. Mine is that it's not constantly on television, you know, like Sweet Home Alabama or Legally Blonde or one of those that's like constantly, you know, on TV because it's just so overpopulated, you know.
Well, they have more popular stars.
Yeah, exactly. And so this was like,
unpopular opinion, I don't think Chris Evans is that attractive. He's
great. He's good in this movie, though.
I know. That's a whole other podcast.
That's a whole other podcast. But so this movie is, you know, it's about this woman who, what's your number? Is it how many, the number of men that she slept with? And she finds, she's comparing the number of friends, you know, with her friends. Her number is much higher than the rest of her friends. And that freaks her out because, you know, she's like, what's wrong with me? Chris Evans happens to be the gentleman who lives across the hall from her. And one of the best parts of this movie is that it is very much meant for the female gaze, in the sense that Chris Evans spends, you know, 30% of this movie wearing minimal amount of clothing, you know, which I think is, doesn't usually happen.
Yeah, he's like hot and shirtless.
Yeah,
he's,
and they're
not
like,
just shirtless, he's just straight up naked for the first half of the movie.
Yeah, like he just walks in and out of her apartment in his shorts all the time. And it's, you know, as they develop this like friendly neighborhood, you know, neighborly relationship, they, you know, help each other out of jams and things like that. He hides in her apartment to escape from whatever woman he happens to be sleeping
with.
So
many problems
with
the movie, by
so
the way,
many,
but it's still
so
super
great.
Enjoyable.
He's because a cad. That's fine. He's a cad. As long as he doesn't date rape anybody, it's
he's
fine.
He's a cad, but you know what? she's not judging him for being a cat, and he's not judging her as she comes out with her issues and, mm-hmm. you know, what her mission is to. And the plot of the movie is that she kind of goes through and looks up all the guys that she used to date to try to find out, hey, what happened? You know, it's sort of a self-analysis thing right. for her, right?
So one of the lines that she uses in this article is that a lot of romantic comedies were criticized for defining women as creatures driven by their need for monogamy. Is that part of this?
No.
Yeah.
I don't know, because you're missing like a little part of the plot of the movie yeah. is that she reads this article in like a fashion magazine yeah. that says you're not supposed to sleep with more than 20 people,
oh,
and
right.
she has slept with 19 people.
Okay.
And then I think accidentally sleeps with the 20th person. So what she's doing is she's going back to all of her old boyfriends to try to marry, like find someone that she wants to be with.
So her number doesn't increase.
So she just sleeps with someone she's already slept with.
Got it.
Which is kind of fucked up.
Yeah. But she's acting not of her own volition, but she's acting based on some arbitrary standards that she thinks that she's supposed to follow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the point of the movie is that she's never comfortable being herself.
Right.
Except when she's around mm-hmm. Chris Evans.
Yes.
Which mm-hmm. she figures out at the end of the movie.
Yeah. So I have not seen Insecure, but one of the ideas that kept popping up is that the romantic comedy as we know it is shifting towards a very different kind of romantic comedy, focusing on not so much the simple cut and dry version of people falling in love and living happily ever after, but more focused on women or a man finding their identity along with a romantic partner, like as a part of it, and mm-hmm. not necessarily having a happy ending.
It's moving to television series.
Yeah, it's moving to television series. So What's Your Number definitely sounds a little bit more like Insecure, right? Like it definitely sounds a little bit more like some of the stuff that you see on Netflix or on FX. Mm-hmm. When was that movie?
It's more recent.
Yeah, What's Your Number was right after Captain America, actually. Okay. So, you know, less than 10 years old.
Yeah, maybe one day I'll have a podcast where I don't talk about Chris Evans, but
today is not the day.
Today is not the day. All right, so your second one definitely sounds like, both of these so far sound a little bit more in line with romantic comedies that tend to flip a couple of tropes on their heads versus straight up Pretty Woman, Julia Roberts vehicles.
Both of these movies that we've talked about so far, the interesting part of the movie is the friendship between the lead characters. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very much established. Like, it doesn't follow the straight and narrow definition of, heteronormative mm-hmm. couples who are going to fall in love and that's just going to be the end of it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I only have one movie that I picked, so I don't need to go. Until the very end.
Oh, come on. You're going to save it till the very end.
No, I'm not. I mean, we can talk about it, but Pyle doesn't think it's underrated because it's on CMT all the time. But I do think it's underrated. My pick was Sweet Home Alabama. You don't like it?
I mean, I've seen it more than once because it's on TV all the time. It's okay. I don't not like it.
And
I don't think the actor is very attractive. That's probably why I don't like it.
I mean, I think Josh Lucas is fine.
He's okay.
He's okay. The reason I like it, though, is for a lot of the reasons that it doesn't follow most of the conventions of romantic comedies. It's very much in line with a woman figuring out her identity first before she figures out who her romantic partner is versus that being the same thing, right? In a lot of these movies, you get the woman's identity is the same thing as her quest to fall in love. Like, all of a sudden, she becomes a real person the minute she falls in love or she gets married or something like that. And with Sweet Home Alabama, so many things that you don't see in traditional romantic comedies. She has an abortion. She left the guy to begin with to go pursue her own career and her own personal fulfillment as, like, a fashion designer in New York. Before coming back and then deciding, okay, now I'm actually going to focus on my personal life. Like, she, you know, there's some tropes. There's a love triangle. There is multiple grand romantic gestures.
Mistaken identity.
She is unsure of her past. Then she learns to, like, embrace her past along with her romantic relationship. So those are all things that I really, really like about the movie. And the big one, though, and both of the movies that I picked for my favorite, the woman's professional life is a huge part of her personal life, which generally the romantic comedies treat whatever the woman's occupation is as like secondary comedic vehicle. Like you'll have a best friend who she works with and that's all you really know about her job. Pretty Woman is another one where like the fact that she's a prostitute is huge. Mm-hmm. Like that's like 90% mm-hmm. of the movie. So yeah, it really like treats her career as one of her defining traits, which you never see anywhere else. I know, which is a great segue to your second one.
My second romantic comedy of choice, underrated, is Made in Manhattan, mm-hmm. starring our favorite Jennifer Lopez and
Ralph Fiennes.
Who is, I'm not going to say a revelation. I'm not sure how good Ralph Fiennes is in this movie.
He's not great.
J-Lo is so good and has so much chemistry with everyone that she totally owns it. Again, this is one where, you know, this is I like because she's an older woman. She's Latina. She's not like the cute young blonde girl that you mm-hmm. see in so many romantic comedies. You know, she's a maid in a hotel in New York. She's a single mom juggling a kid. And it actually does pass the Bechdel test because, you know, she has conversations with her female friends about her job and mm-hmm. her life. It has nothing to do with, you know, this handsome politician that's also staying in the hotel room or in the hotel that she's working at. So
and it talks about socioeconomic class, which very romantic much so. Comedies rarely do. That's Pretty Woman deals with it, but in a very condescending way, right? She decides that she's not going to be a prostitute anymore, not a sex worker, and she's going to marry a rich guy and mm-hmm. and live happily ever after. And
in this movie, she gets promoted into the management chain. She, you know, gets works her way out of being a maid and into the management chain as opposed to, you know, quitting her job entirely to go and marry this rich politician. Like, she's still going to be a manager at this hotel. And that's, you know, good for her.
Don't you just think, though, that someone came up with the name Made in Manhattan and then was like, we need to make a movie about this?
Oh, I mean.
I mean, you know what? Yeah. God bless him. Because it's a great movie.
J-Lo is phenomenal in it, you know, and they do the whole thing. I mean, she gets to go to the ball and, you know, it's just like in Pretty Woman where she reaches out to all of her female friends in the various service industries to get fancy jewelry and a fancy dress mm-hmm. for the ball. And, you know, her female friends or like look after her kid and do the childcare piece like while she can go and, you know, do all these things and go on fancy dates
with
Ralph Fiennes. Yeah. Or like
when does Ralph Fiennes find out she's a maid?
Right at the end, she comes clean at the ball.
Okay. So all
No, she doesn't come clean at the ball.
No?
No, she doesn't come clean at the ball. It has to do with Natasha, who's that woman?
Richardson. Natasha Richardson.
Yeah, Natasha Richardson, RIP, sad. She's lovely in this movie as well. Mm. So Natasha Richardson plays the she on paper is the person that Ralph Fiennes would go for, right? She's rich, she's upwardly mobile, she's staying in the same hotel, and she's been chasing Ralph Fiennes forever. So there's a little bit of a love triangle there. And Natasha Richardson finds out that the maid is impersonating her.
Right.
And then she kind of forces a confrontation.
So J-Lo's lying to Ralph Fiennes the whole movie.
She is. It's a lie of omission for sure.
Yes, it is. Like she, you know.
So he does not fall in love with the maid.
Well, he doesn't fall in love with the maid, but he falls in love with this person who, for every other thing, is genuine. But then she has to come clean about it, right?
And she does, yeah.
And she does.
And he still wants to track her down and talk to her, but she avoids him until...
You know, and the funny thing is the lovely little twist here is that the grand romantic gesture doesn't come from her. It comes from her kid. Mm. He is the one in the end who, like, gives a little speech that's mm-hmm. like, I think you really like my mom, in the middle of, like, a press conference.
And he's actually the catalyst who brings them together from the beginning. And Tyler Posey, who plays him, is the, you know.
He's just cute.
It's, like, the most adorable, you know, 10-year-old kid ever.
But it does. It passes the Bechdel test. It talks mm-hmm. about, like, socioeconomic problems. And she very clearly states, like, how is this going to work between us? Because we're from two very different classes. Mm-hmm. And they get the happy ending, but there's no wedding.
And there's no, like, she moves into his palace. You know what I mean? Like, they end in the conference room. Like, you know, they're going to give it a shot, essentially.
Well, it says, no, the credits have her being promoted. Like, you can see her being promoted. But she's also, because one person is upwardly mobile, she's taken all of her friends with her.
Mm-hmm. That's
like,
true.
There's lots of little subtle things in this movie that I think are done so well that they don't really get credit for.
Right.
And the way they handle these problems is one of them.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the movie. I don't remember it very well. But just to me, like, the fact that she is lying about who she is the whole time to me is a very typical
that's a trope.
Rom-com trope you know, kind of turns me off a little bit.
I totally agree. Like, that's very much a trope, and then you dig a little bit deeper and you're like, okay, that's good. Sari, what's your next one?
Hold on. Just before we move on, I would like to state that Stanley Tucci is also in Made in Manhattan, and any movie with Stanley Tucci
makes it better.
He's very good in every movie I've seen.
Yeah. We can have a whole podcast about Stanley Tucci.
We can talk about this. You talk about Stanley Tucci, and this is just a digression, but Easy A is something that we can talk about too, because we've all seen
great
it.
One.
It's great,
And I think it, and this is very much in line with the new kind of romantic comedy.
Mm-hmm.
She's much younger.
It's high school.
It's high school. Yeah. It's like a teen movie slash romantic comedy, and it, you know, it doesn't follow the regular tropes of a teen movie or a romantic comedy.
It's smart. And well, and
Stanley Tucci's like super hot in it. He plays the hot dad.
And Patricia Clarkson, the parents together are, I mean, they make that movie that really brings it to another level.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Yeah.
All right, what's your second one?
So I'm going to talk about my third one before my second one, I think.
Whichever one you want.
So my last pick, and then we'll get to my second pick, is The Chase. Which may not technically be a romantic comedy. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like an action film. These two have not seen it, so I don't know how much we're going to be able to talk about it. It's old. It came out in 1995, and it's very dated when you watch it. It stars Charlie Sheen and Christy Swanson.
Wow.
And Charlie Sheen is like a... He's like a... He's like a thief.
Mm-hmm.
And he... gets in some sort of jam where he ends up taking Christy Swanson hostage and carjacking her car. And the whole movie takes place in a car chase on the highway, and it's real time, which I love.
Interesting.
Oh.
Any movie that's filmed, not filmed in real time, but takes place in real time has got me.
Condensed period.
The movie takes, the story of the movie takes place in the hour and a half it takes you to watch the movie. Mm-hmm. And in that hour and a half, they're just in the car with the cops chasing them, who is Henry Rollins, by the way.
Amazing.
And he's got like a film crew with him, and there's all this stuff going on, and it's super wild. And then they fall in love like in the hour and a half in the car, and they even have sex in the car while they're on the highway in this car chase.
This sounds like a terrible movie.
It's so bad, but I don't know. I love it. I love it for all of these like different reasons, because these things that they like accomplished in it that have nothing to do with it being a romantic comedy, but they do fall in love. So I think it counts.
So does it? So it counts as a romantic comedy. It doesn't count as like an action movie. When we're talking about genre.
I don't know. Someone would have to call in and tell me if it's a rom-com or an action movie.
I'll allow it in case you guys didn't fly. No, no, no. I'll allow it. Just because I think that if you think that the romantic element is like the primary selling point of it, then
It's most of the movie is just the two of them in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like...
Does it have any of these?
I guess there's a car phone and people are calling them.
Does it have any of these tropes? Or does it have any action movie? Or does it have more like action movie tropes?
It has action movie tropes. There's car. There's crashes and there's high speed chases and there's like people hanging out of helicopters. It's more, I guess it's more of an action movie.
It sounds very much like an action movie where two people fall in love.
I just wanted to talk about it.
Yeah,
Sari just wanted to talk about The Chase.
This is more about the underrated part than the romantic comedy part.
This is wonderful. All right. Who are you next? Do you have one more?
I do have one more.
I got a surprise one that just popped into my head.
Okay.
I'm excited to talk about.
My third one, I will say that I have not actually rewatched it in quite a while, but... one that I think is super underrated is called Kate and Leopold.
Oh my God.
Circa 2001.
That's the worst fucking movie, dude.
I kind of don't like that movie at all either.
I hate it.
You don't hate it?
You are a big Outlander fan, so I think that's why you like it, but...
I mean, I kind of like time travel anyway. Yeah, I do like
You guys both love time travel.
I mean, yeah, but I think the primary part is that it isn't one of the underrated Meg Ryan comedies, even though she is, you know...
I just have to say I'm disappointed Meg Ryan made it into this room tonight.
I'm not going to lie. You got a lot of work to do with that one.
However, Hugh Jackman plays Leopold character, and he is fantastic. Hugh Jackman has more range than like any other person ever in Hollywood.
My mission is to get you to hate that movie because it's a terrible, terrible movie. Hugh Jackman is wonderful. He's delightful. But
as always.
For all of the reasons. So that movie, Kate and Leopold, which on the surface is a perfectly fine watchable movie or whatever, but for all of my purposes, it's so hugely problematic because I remember that movie. And in the end, I was like, this is some bullshit because she decides to go back in time to be with him. And I'm like, you're a woman in the 1800s. You're not gonna be able to do shit. Like, there's no tampons. Like, you can't vote. You can't do anything. She gives up all of her freedom so she can follow this dumb guy around.
Why does he want to go back? Why doesn't he stay?
He's a time traveler.
He's a duke. Like, he's like super rich and, you know, doesn't have to like scoop up dog poop on New York sidewalks like he does.
So it's like a fish out of water comedy slash romantic comedy, and she falls in love with his chivalry. Blah,
I know
blah,
that
blah.
I've seen it and I remember what they look like in it, but I don't remember any.
So Kate and Leopold is to me an example of the old school romantic comedies that now are just hugely problematic.
This was 2001, so this was you know, well over 15 years ago.
It's like hugely problematic because the main driving purpose for her is her romantic entanglement. She gives up her entire life to travel back in time to be with this dude, and going back in time as a woman,
like, they do that in Outlander too.
Yeah, well, going back in time as a woman is a shitty deal.
Yes,
you know,
that is
it's
true.
An accident in Outlander.
Yeah, but
at first,
exactly.
And then she falls in love with the guy.
And then she makes a choice to go back a second time.
So I'm not that far.
Sorry, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
I think I'm not going to watch it anymore.
So, okay, I'll give it to you because I think that he is very charming and handsome, and it's like old school. But a better Hugh Jackman one is one with him and Ashley Judd, Someone Like You.
I was looking at that one too.
And it has a lot of tropes. But it does pass the Bechdel test. She and her friend, who's a magazine editor, talk about like her career and her relationships too. So it's a little bit like that. It's still not ideal.
Yeah,
that's not my pick though.
It's Chase. There's not even another female character in the Chase. Yeah. But that's fine. They're in a car. It's just the two of them.
Well, I've been thinking a lot about it because a lot of the movies that I find myself watching recently and a lot of shows that I watch recently have this terrible habit of showing one strong female character, but they don't have women actually talk to each other, which is like, it's fucking crazy. Nope. There's lots of women in these shows, but they never talk to each other, which is insane.
Yep. They're not even in the same room
together.
Yeah,
they're never even in the same room together. Yeah. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
All right, go with
really
your third movie.
You're ready to end it? All right.
No.
Well, my third movie is like my typical romantic comedy is The Holiday.
Okay.
Starring Cameron Diaz, Jude Law.
You guys both love
Kate Winslet.
It's a great movie.
Jack Black.
Great movie.
And Eli
Wallach.
Yeah, I tried to watch it and I could not.
Didn't you come and see it with us in the movie theater?
Hell no.
Oh,
we paid actual cash money for it.
I think it's actually the only romantic comedy I've seen in the movie theater. And Pyle and Gale brought me. I liked it.
But is it a tradition? It sounds like a traditional romantic
comedy.
It is.
Absolutely. It is a traditional romantic comedy. But the reason I like it so much, there's like one specific thing. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a couple of things that I think it does really well a little bit differently. But there is this one scene where Cameron Diaz and Jude Law just have an incredibly frank conversation about the fact that they really like each other and want to try to be together, even though they live on opposite sides of the world. And they just like talk about it like, okay, well, how do we do this? I don't know that I've ever seen that before in a movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to me, it just felt very real.
Yeah.
And I think it's okay to admit, like, I know so many people that take cues from movies where they're like, oh, I like this person, but I can't just give up my whole life to be with them. And like, I think that that's okay. Like, if you really, I mean, not traveling back in time is different, but like, I mean, if you find someone, if you like are really into someone and you guys like have a connection, like it's okay to make that a priority.
Right.
And they do that in a very frank way. And I really appreciate that about the movie. Also, the friendship between Kate Winslet and the old guy. Mm-hmm. And then like, I don't know, there's like a lot of things that are a little bit different, but yes, it's all in all, it is a very traditional romantic comedy. Yeah.
And I would say, like, Jack Black for, you know, playing the part of, like, Kate Winslet's love interest is, you know, different than... It's a little different. And then Jude Law is a single dad. He has two kids, mm-hmm. you know, that they have to deal with.
The
and, like,
single
that kind
dad of your dreams, yeah. with, Jude
like,
Law. Come
the
on,
two
guys.
Most adorable little Muppets, yes, but still.
And it surprisingly also does not pass the Bechdel test. Like, unless you count, like, they have Kate Winslet and... Cameron Diaz have like a chat conversation mm-hmm. where they're arranging to switch houses, but it's still the subcontext of the conversation is mm-hmm. still that they want to get away from these boys.
Yeah. yeah. They ask each other like, you know, Kate Winslet. No.
And they're not in the same room talking. I don't count it. It doesn't count.
And the Bechdel test shouldn't be the end all be all of whether whether these films do right by women, but it's just a very good baseline to be like, shit, do women even talk to each other in these movies?
It's just surprising to find out how many movies don't pass it. Like even ones where you're in your head, you're like, oh, there's these two really strong female leads in this movie, but they don't talk to each other.
They only talk about boys.
I mean, romantic comedies are super formulaic, right? We talked about all the tropes that you find in a romantic comedy. The next step for them has to be to subvert all of these tropes. So you find some movies, The Breakup is a good example, the Jennifer Aniston movie with
Vince Vaughn,
mm-hmm. where it's called The Breakup, and had it been a regular romantic comedy, they would have gotten back together in the end, but they don't. Mm-hmm. They like break up and they're both happier people because of it, mm-hmm. right? So you see a lot of newer comedies subverting what used to pass, right? So there's no happy ending. Or the happy ending is that they're better off alone, mm-hmm. actually.
There is still a hunger for the right romantic comedy. It's just that the standards are a lot higher than they used to be, and they do take into account, well, who, you know, is this feminist enough? Like, you know, Prince Charming isn't going to swoop in and save the maiden. Like, that Cinderella story is probably not going to be made anymore unless, like, Pixar does it or it's a Disney movie. You know, like, when they do it for older women or even just more mature women, it'll be a different kind of a thing. Like, I will bring up the Sandra Bullock, Hugh Grant classic 2 Weeks Notice.
Fantastic movie.
Right? Like,
you like that movie?
Oh my God, that movie is amazing.
I mean, I think it's a good movie too. I'm just surprised, like, why does Hemel like that movie?
I have very bad taste.
I think it's fine. I love Sandra Bullock.
Yeah, see, that's the thing.
Well, I like it. The movies that I like have in common, the woman has a really strong professional identity and she's established her whole life before she takes the step of... you know, figuring out who her partner should be.
Right.
They're not one in the same.
And when he crosses her professionally, she totally she blows him off. Like when he starts, you know, goes back, reneges on his promise about the development project, you know, she's like, it's over. We're not even going
to. Yeah. So to me, the reason I like them is because they do the ones that I do like do a really good job with their female characters of establishing that identity outside of a romantic relationship. Mm-hmm. And in more traditional romantic comedies, it's the same fucking thing and it drives me crazy.
But in a lot of these movies where the women has a very strong professional life, aren't they kind of like portrayed as bitter and unhappy?
Yes.
Because they have worked so hard and they don't have the things that they really need.
I think that's also a trope, right? Is the bitter, successful woman. It was in not a romantic comedy, but in Jurassic World, and it drove me up the damn wall.
Oh, yeah, man. Jessica Chastain.
Jessica Chastain character was like this uptight professional bitch.
Pretty sure that that's Bryce Dallas Howard.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
I'm just saying.
Thanks, file.
So, yes. No, I totally agree with you. Is that 2 Weeks Notice is a good job of... straddling that line of being like, okay, she's a little bit lonely versus she feels like her life doesn't have meaning, right? There's a terrible romantic comedy. It's a Reese Witherspoon, Chris Pine, Tom Hardy one.
So bad.
So bad.
Oh, terrible. It was unwatchable, but I still watched it.
Unwatchably bad. And a large part of it, well, so many things were wrong with
it. So many things.
But one of the big ones that I hated was just like, dude, she's got a great job. She's got a great life. And she is portrayed as this woman who's lacking so much just because she doesn't have a boyfriend. 2 weeks' notice doesn't do that. Two weeks' notice makes Sandra Bullock out to be weird and socially awkward, but not like there's
she's
something
not
wrong
bitter.
With you.
She's not a bitter person. She's more of she's driven. She's a driven lawyer. You know, she's not. There's no bitterness about her character.
Yeah. So that's.
I don't remember that part, but if you say so.
It's good. A lot of romantic comedies get a shitty rap because everyone's like, oh, that's not realistic.
There's a lot of bad ones.
Right.
They're not all bad.
Well, realism isn't necessarily the, you know, the sword that you're going to die on in terms of film in general. I mean, nothing is, you know.
Right. But it feels like it feels more emotionally manipulative. Like Marvel, I can tell you, okay, that's fake. But to pretend that the real world actually functions like this is.
I think that it's still entertainment and there's room for charm in, you know, in your entertainment. Like it doesn't always have to be, you know, gritty, scary storytelling.
It's the shit I watch when I'm folding the laundry.
Yeah.
And I like it.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for hanging out. This was super fun.
Thanks, Hemel.
Right. This was great.
Yeah. Thank you guys for listening, and we will see you soon.
Bye, fans.